Okay, we're in Maamar Sheni. We're going to go to page 66. Let's skip a few astronomical pages that sum up a little of what the Gemara says that's relevant to the deadline. And on page 66, Vini Edia is Shabsis Hashem, the bottom line. We spoke the last couple of times about the international dateline, and as I pointed out to you, the Kuzari discusses it not in the context of talking about astronomy, which is the way we normally think of it, but in the context of talking about the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, which is really the theme of this section, regarding Eretz Yisrael being central to just about everything. So here, at the end of the Maamar HaSheni, the part we're skipping deals with specific Gemaras and how it fits with his statement regarding the dateline. Again, if you have my print, there are a couple of pages here, one, two, three, four, like another five pages that go back on what, on the piece we're skipping. It's a little unclear how he resolves, certain issues in the Gemara, and, these are issues that have to do with astronomy. Getting back to Vihine, to his ending of the sentence, Hine Yediya Shapsis Hashem, Umayadei Hashem, Tluya Ba'aretz Shinachlas Hashem. Obviously, the setting of the dates depends on Eretz Yisrael. We can't be Mekadosh the Chodesh outside of Eretz Yisrael. So what he's summing up is that the setting of the dates and his claim that Shabsais Hashem depends on Eretz Yisrael wouldn't make sense, except that, remember he said earlier, that the first Shabbos began at Sinai or at the place that the Mon fell on Shabbos first, which he considered part of Eretz Yisrael. The Shita of the Kuzari is that the Sinai Desert where the Jews traveled is technically part of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Yediya Shabsis Hashem, Mayadei Hashem, Atoli in Eretz, Shinachlas Hashem, Imashe Korosai, including everything that transpired. And now, he gives a rundown of the way we reflect on the centrality of Eretz Yisrael. He says, Lashen Nikras, Har Kodshai. We find in Nach that Eretz Yisrael is called Har Kodshai, V'Hadoim Raglov, V'Shar Shemayim, V'Chimitzien Teitzei Seira, plus Mashim Izrizus La'avais, La'dorba, V'Bidei Kananim. Even when Eretz Yisrael is in the hand of, in the hands of not only non-Jews, but Kananim, who are Oivdei Avodah Zarah, still each of them, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, were told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to live in Eretz Yisrael. V'iksofam la, and the great desire for it, v'haloysam atzmoysam eleha k'yakiv v'yosef. The desire to be buried there, as we find regarding Yaakov and Yosef, really all the Shvatim, but clearly regarding Yaakov and Yosef, utchinas Moshe l'ra'isa. And Moshe Rabbeinu's desire to see it, v'nimna'a mimenu v'hoya ketzef. And the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was withheld as part of a, what's apparently a punishment, and letting Moshe Rabbeinu see it from the top of the mountain, and that was considered a kindness. So obviously, this is a synopsis of different places we see the centrality of Eretz Yisrael. Now the next sentence needs explanation. He says the following. And he's talking about the praise of Eretz Yisrael. The king had asked him to please elaborate, and he's saying, the fact that we find in Nach that the nations of the world desired Eretz Yisrael, where do we find that? Paras, v'haydu, v'yavon. Now here we have a history challenge. Where did Paras have any desire for Eretz Yisrael? So now we find that Kairash, the king of Paras, gave permission to build the Beis HaMikdash. It came from there. So that we understand.
That was Esther's son.
Esther's son, right. Well, first it was the first Kairish, which was not Esther's son, which was before Achashverosh, and then the last, who was. And then V'yavon, we'll skip Haidu for a minute. Yavon are the Greeks. That's interesting. I don't remember ever learning this. In the Kol Yehuda, he brings about 8 lines from the bottom. Ufrashas Gedalus Habayis Asher Gidlei HaMelech HaRishon LeYavon Alexandra. Alexander Mugdam. Alexander, I wasn't aware of this, gave money to extend or to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Halek suva al sefer divrei yamim li Yosefin. And Josephus, b'haroisei sikar teferes gedul asai, shoshimin atzadik. When Alexander saw the greatness of Shimon HaTzadik, Asher Nesoya Melech Hazel of Yishoya Demusti Yaiknai Menatzeach Lefanu Beis Malchamta, Alexander said that when he went to battle, he saw an image in front of him. And when Shimon HaTzadik, the Kohen Gadol, came, he said, oh, that's him. So, now that part of it is a Gemara in Yuma. But the fact that Alexander actually spent money to extend the Beis HaMikdash is not something I remember from the Gemara or anything I learned. He brings from Josephus that he did that. And later he brings that Talmai Melech Yava Gamu Osla Beis Tefartein was called a Kavarahu HaMesupa B'chiber Aristotle Hayayin Hayavani Kashadarish Darish Melezah Kayish Leishim Mizakeinim. At the time of the writing, the 70 translations of the Septuagint, that at the time the Sefer Torah was translated by 70 Chachamim, again he gave money to extend the Beis HaMikdash or perhaps to repair it. So we find that the Greeks and the Parsim Wadai were interested. The mystery is the word Haidu. Haidu is
Turkey.
India, usually. India. Yeah, Oif Haidu is Turkey. The bird, the turkey.
No.
The country of Turkey? I don't think it's called. I don't think so. I think you're confusing it with the turkey that we eat, the turkey roll. There's Tanagal Haidu, okay. It's Turkey. From Haidu to Kush, that's India. So the thing is that where do we find the king of Haidu doing anything with the Beis HaMikdash? That's very strange. Deitzenech, but on the bottom is stuck. So he writes, Dayavesh Malach Haidu, that Darius, the son of Esther, was the king of Haidu. Where was the king of Haidu? Where was the king of Haidu? The Kol Yehuda writes, on the next page, Lein Espasha Esleinu Pirsim Inyan Haidu. I don't know what he's referring to when he says Haidu. Lein the Kabbalah Yaisi Amaisach HaShverish Amalach Mahidu Vad Kush. He's referring to HaShverish. Shverish didn't do anything for Eretz Yisrael. So if you take the two together, Achshverosh is king from Haidu to Kush. And his son Daryavish took over, so maybe Daryavish could be called Mehaidu Vad Kush. Maybe that's what it means. At any rate, what's the Kuzari doing? The king asked him to elaborate on the honor of Eretz Yisrael. And in part of his listing, he's saying that these non-Jewish kings, or kings of non-Jewish countries, considered it an honored place. Getting back to the text, on the bottom line of 72, they asked that people pray for them in the Beis HaMikdash, and they spend money on it to build up the place. And the fact that they gave others to spend it, they didn't go themselves, is because they weren't adequately devoted to the Beis HaMikdash. Now the question is, what's going on here? Why do we really care if non-Jews want Eretz Yisrael? It seems like there's some covet of Eretz Yisrael that there are non-Jews who want it. If that's the case, then today also there are non-Jews who want Eretz Yisrael. Is that a covet? We say it's all so wonderful the Arabs want it? I don't think we consider that an honor. Yes, he's going to get to that in a minute. He will get to that. But right now, it's a little difficult to understand the Kavana. He was asked by the king to elaborate on the honor of Eretz Yisrael. And he says, well, non-Jewish kingdoms were interested in it. Why we see honor in that is a little hard to know. Certainly, if they were interested for strategic reasons, we certainly don't understand. There was more strategic reason to build the Beis HaMikdash there. Right? Koresh gave money to build the Beis HaMikdash there. So while it's true, strategically, it's a very, it's always located right between Africa, Asia, and Europe. But he's referring to the fact they're willing to spend money on the Beis HaMikdash to extend it.
Well, that's how you curry favor with inhabitants. The Jews will be allies of the
Kurds. Yeah, so that's why it's hard. So it's hard to understand why we're proud that happened, if they want to curry favor. It's very difficult. It might be that rather than it being an honor of the Beis Hamikdash, it strengthens our emunah. Our emunah, the idea that Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reishis, that the fact that Jews are such a small group, really the smallest of the family of nations, or how to even call Jews a nation, we're a very small group of people, and still the whole world tumbles around us. Right? The greatest world powers, Paras, Haidu, and Yavan, all were interested. It's hard to understand. Alexander had the whole world, and this little piece of land to him mattered so much. So it may be that we're not calling that the honor of Eretz Yisrael, but it's a chizuk emunah, the fact that that there's certain centrality to Eretz Yisrael. Perhaps that has to do with it.
It's true today, probably to a greater extent than it was back then. Everything today in the UN.
Yeah, but you got news for you. It's been that way, you know, during the Crusades. It was that way also to a great degree. But you're right, it's that way today too. The UN has nothing better to do. Rabbi Wein has his line that they did a search of the front page of the New York Times from 48 to 98. And the word Israel appeared on the front page of the New York Times more than the word Russia. Right? Russia was in a Cold War with the two superpowers, the United States. And the word Israel appeared on the front page of the New York Times. Perhaps he said how many more times, I don't recall, but it's just a mind-boggling thing. You have this tiny nation, which during those years had 4 or 5 million people, and you have the superpower Russia with a nuclear arsenal, and the Cuban Missile Crisis, and everything that went on in between. And the word Israel appeared more than the word Russia on the front page of the Times. So that's... you have to have a computer to search it. But
if you don't see Yad Hashem in that, you know...
So some say maybe he means it as an emunah rather than as a covet. Okay, and he goes on page 73. Umashem raimim imaisai im heder harois hashchina olav. And the fact that the nations of the world still consider it a place that's lofty, despite the fact that there is no shchina there, v'shkal ha'umais chaygigin elav u'misavim loy. So laseinu, and the nations have a desire for it, and sometimes Jews don't, because of our golos and our lachatz. And to tell you what the rabbi said about the greatness of Israel, is it take me a long time. So of course the king says, never mind, it's going to take you a long time. Don't tell me it's going to take you a long time. Tell me some of the things they said about covered Eretz Israel. Now, before I get to that, there's another question here, and that is, in the Kal Yehuda here, he brings the fact, reading it somehow into this whole passage of the Kuzari, that Shlomo HaMelech, when he inaugurated the Beis HaMikdash, he requested from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Beisi Beis Tfilo Yikare L'Chalo Amin, that the Beis HaMikdash be a place that the nations of the world would come to pray. They would come and they would daven there, and that their tefillahs also should be answered in the Beis HaMikdash. That was part of Shlomo HaMelech's tefillah. Now, there's place here for a chakira, for a question. Why did Shlomo HaMelech daven, and it was a rather elaborate tefillah, where he davened that, Gam El Hanochri Ashaloy Me'amcha Yisrael, who, even a foreigner, who's not a Jew, and a member of God's nation, who come from its distant land, Eretz Yisrael. I'm quoting this pasuk in Malachim Aleph that the Kol Yehuda quotes. So, why was it? Why did Shlomo HaMelech daven that the goyim should be able to daven and be answered in the Beis HaMikdash? Two possibilities. It could be that it was a desire that the Beis HaMikdash should be for all of humanity, not just for Jews. Oh, so that's the second possibility. All right, so one possibility is, I guess a more liberal interpretation would be, that all of humanity should recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Beis HaMikdash should serve as a place to bring in all the nations of the world. Or, as Lee says, maybe it's for the honor of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not to make it available to the non-Jewish world, but for the honor of the Beis HaMikdash, for the covet of the Beis HaMikdash, that there's a, the fact that nations of the world come, it's a central point for the whole world, that somehow that, what? In Aleinu we talk about Kvot Shemayim. In Aleinu, it's a good point. In Aleinu we talk about the nations recognizing Hashem. We're not saying it for the sake of the nations. We're saying as Kvot Shemayim, we want the nations to recognize Hashem. So if this is Kvot HaMikdash, or this is for the sake of the non-Jews.
Is it problematic that the Beis HaMikdash is a gift to us? Why would we want to share it with them?
So that's the question. Why would we want to share it with them? So it depends. If you're if you have a humanistic approach, so you say that all human beings should benefit. Or you could have the approach that for us also, the fact that the whole world is interested, that makes it something. Makes it something. You know, it's not clear. There is a general question about whether there is any inyan, whether there's any benefit in, so to speak, being makariv non-Jews. Getting non-Jews to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Generally, as you know, Jews have never practiced any type of outreach to non-Jews. We have a hard enough time with the Jews. We've never practiced outreach to non-Jews. The last Lubavitcher Rebbe, though, had a shita that part of Yemei Samashiach is that, that God's name should be all over the world, and his shita is not to be makar of non-Jews to Geirus, but to be makar of non-Jews to recognize Hashem. Now, how Shlomo HaMelech meant it, I don't know. Shlomo HaMelech didn't speak to me in this Gilgal. So I don't know how he meant it. What? He took Baspara, yeah. So again, the same question is, did he take Baspara because he wanted the nations of the world to benefit from recognizing Hashem? Or did he do it for the covered Klal Yisrael? That he reached out. It's not clear what his motivation was in all these things. Baspara was Megayer at the time. But when he reached out to other nations, Amalka Shava, the Queen of Sheba, that he was Makar. Was he Makar of her because he felt the world should have a Kiruv to recognizing Kvayt Shemayim? Or because he felt he wanted to build up Kvayt Shemayim as a way of doing it? So it's something that you can't answer, but it's open to both interpretations. Yes? I can't hear you. That's right. Chazal say that had the guy recognized what the world, what the Beis Hamikdash does to the world, they would have put armies to protect it rather than to destroy it. Yeah. It's true. It's true. It's still okay. I said, at any rate, the Kuzari. This is very good. We're learning, you know, till I go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm leaving, God willing, 2 weeks from today. So this is a perfect lead up to it. So the Kuzari says to the king, says to the Chaver, he says, listen, don't tell me Yarech Sipura. It's too much to say. Say something. So Chaver is Omer HaChaver. The Chaver says, okay, Mimasha Omer. I'll give you a selection of Divrei Chazal regarding Eretz Yisrael. And what follows here is a list of some of the most... Most important words in the Gemara that refer to Eretz Yisrael. Hakoyel Malin LeEretz Yisrael, Beinah Kamasiyim. I want to explain this. The halacha is when a couple is married, that a husband can force his wife. If she doesn't want, he can't put her in chains. But if they follow the halacha, then if a husband or wife, one of them wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, then the other one has to go along. So, husband and wife, one wants to go, the other one's supposed to go. Hakel Malin Eretz Yisrael, Meina Kometzian. V'danu, Ha'isha She'ena Reitz Alal Eizim Baila Eretz Yisrael, She'teisip Alei Ksuvah. It's considered improper. V'hepchei, the opposite, Kashu Ish She'ena Reitz Alal Eizim Ishtai Be'eretz She'eitz Yitei Ksuvah. Now here, is an interesting psak from Rebbe Yashiv. There was a couple that wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, a couple that lived here in Brazil, in our hemisphere, and they had a dispute. The woman wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, the husband, he had his pranasa there, he wanted to stay there. So they said, let's go. She said, HaKoyim Adel Eretz Yisrael. So they said, Rabbi Yashiv. So B'Yashav asked her, why do you want to move to Eretz Yisrael? She said, because I have more friends in Eretz Yisrael, in Brazil, in Sao Paulo. I don't have that many people. I don't have that many friends. So he said that you can't force your husband to go. He said that you can only force your husband to go to Eretz Yisrael if you're going because of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. If you're going because it's better for you socially, or even it's better for you economically, I think, if I read correctly, she also said the laws of inheritance in Brazil don't give a wife inheritance of her husband. Somebody could check that up, I don't know. And in Eretz Yisrael, I'm not sure exactly, but even by Torah law, she has a right to live in her husband's house or her husband's estate the rest of her life. So she said it's just better. Those reasons, Rabbi Yosha said, that's not what Chazal meant. They meant you're going to Eretz Yisrael because it's Eretz Yisrael. It's an interesting thing. I remember once in learning Ksubis, I had a raya to it. At that moment, I'm not remembering. There's a raya from a pretty clear Chazal to that idea. But at any rate, getting back to the Chaver, he mentioned some more Chazals. Amru la'olam yador odom b'Eretz Yisrael. It's better to live in Eretz Yisrael, afilu b'ir shuru b'kutim, even in a city that's mostly non-Jewish, and they're better to live in the Chutz La'aretz, even in a land that's mostly Jews. Now, what does it mean? Someone is Chutz La'aretz like he has no God? So, I guess we'll leave that for Monday. God willing, next week, I think Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday next week. That's a session. Okay. Continue.
What does Samer agree with
it? Samer agrees with it.
They agree?
Of course they agree with it. Yeah, but they say he cannot live under a malchus of apikorsis. It says David HaMelech, when he ran into the Eretz HaPlishtim, said he's living outside of Eretz Yisrael. But the Eretz HaPlishtim is part of Eretz Yisrael. So they say, if you live in a malchus of like the Avodah Zara, then it's not Kedai. The question is how to categorize today's government. Whatever you think politically, Klai Yisrael already voted. But in the Ashkafa, in the Halacha of it, there are two sides to the issue. Klai Yisrael voted with their hearts for, to go to Eretz Yisrael, with their feet also. But if you look at it purely academic, standpoint, there's an argument to be made. Schwab writes that he was very disappointed when the state was established. In the introduction, you should read what he writes. He didn't know why people were joyful and dancing. Why are they dancing? They have a government that doesn't believe in God, and it's Israel. That's an honor. The English Rav Schwab on Chumash that Rabbi Maya Schwab put out has in the introduction. It's different once it's there. It's a sakana not to support it. But It's not our pride to have a government that doesn't believe in Shabbos or Kashrus or any of these things.
Remember, Bilbo used to criticize the government vociferously, but he never said that people should vote there, encourage people.
Yeah, the land. We love Eretz Yisrael. We love the land. We don't love the government. We love the land.
Reb just said that, the Brisker Rav said at the time that the Marte was, that he shook his head sadly and said now there are 71 nations.
Very good. Well put. Okay.